from the analytics standpoint, there are so many really smart guys out there that really have gained an advantage on their opponents and in general on their own self-scout stuff that it's definitely worth doing.
In this episode, Josh Sabinas, defensive coordinator at Merrillville High School in Indiana, joins us to share his defensive strategies enhanced by analytics. We explore how he utilizes data-driven insights to optimize their defensive game plans. We discuss the impact of tackle for loss statistics, efficiency rates, and other key analytics on defensive performance, and learn how these insights have influenced his coaching philosophies, game planning strategies, and player development, ultimately shaping a more effective and competitive defense. Stay tuned for our Winning Edge takeaways following the interview.
What you see on tape is a direct reflection of what you teach and how you teach. Video is important, but if you don't teach well, you're not going to like what you see on your video. First Down Playbook has been helping coaches teach better for 13 years. It allows you to present installs, playbooks, and practice cards in half the time with NFL quality. Coaching tools like video pairing, a player app, practice schedules, and wristband sheets have made First Down Playbook a program management system with everything in one place. If you're in a position of leadership with your football program, receive a free one-week look at First Down Playbook. Call them at 512-814-6158 or visit them on their website or social media. Mention Coach and Coordinator Podcast or use the coupon code COACH24 to receive a $100 discount off the normal $700 First Down Playbook team membership price. Links and the phone number are in the show notes. Today, we're going to talk about analytics on defense. And what spurred this conversation was a podcast we put out with Cody Bethke, who is the defensive coordinator at Coe College. And they led the country in Division III in tackles for loss. And about that time, I got a message from a coach out there who I listened to it and said, I would love to share some things with you and how we use our defensive analytics, and especially in regard to tackles for loss. And I ended up calling him on a drive and said, you know what? I wish we were recording this. So we've been able to come back to that. And we're sitting down today and recording an episode with defensive coordinator at Merrillville High School in Indiana, Josh Sabinas. So Josh, one, thank you for reaching out, because I was really intrigued by the conversation and the ideas you were sharing. And thank you again for coming on the podcast.
Yeah, I appreciate it, and really looking forward to kind of being able to share some of the analytics or some of the fun numbers, as I like to think of them, of the defensive side of the football.
Definitely. So we started with that conversation on tackle for loss. So let's make that the starting point for this as well. And I know you discovered some things that helped you guys think about defense, think about how you're going to game plan, put things together, call the defense, et cetera. So talk to us about that starting point for you.
Yeah, so I'm sure many people have heard the Kirby Smart Clinic from years and years ago. Might have even been a Nike Coach of the Year clinic that he really talked about what percentage of the time did the defense give up a score when they had a tackle for loss. And that number was close to 90% or whatever it was. I don't remember exactly. And it really intrigued me because I felt like there was a second piece of that data that was missing. And that is, what percentage of the time did Georgia's defense give up a score when they didn't have a tackle for loss? And so then really started to really dive deep into our own data and, you know, kind of figure out those two numbers, and obviously was able to go back a few years and deep dive into some of those to kind of get a baseline, and just ended up talking with a lot of other coaching buddies that we have. And there's not a real easy way to do that. And so what I ended up having to do is really kind of set up a spreadsheet and let a lot of formulas be able to kind of do all that math for me.
You said it only told half of the equation. So what was it? What did you find out? What was that?
Yeah.
Number?
So, you know, I mean, everybody knows that tackle for losses are good, and obviously getting the offense behind the sticks is good. And I was really kind of looking to change our philosophy. Did we need to be more aggressive on defense to be able to cause tackle for loss? And, you know, being aggressive is a lot of different things. It doesn't necessarily mean just blitzing, you know, obviously stunting or even just putting like a bare front up to, again, just present different pictures. Maybe it's switching the front from one series to the other, but really was wanting to know that number, and then the number, okay, what percentage of the time when we didn't get a tackle for loss score? What I found was the years that we were pretty good, that number is right around 90%. Above 85% is good. So like if 85% of the time we get a stop, I know you offensive guys like to think of that number the opposite way, but 85% of the time we get a stop when we get a tackle for loss. And so that second part of the number, what I found was there are years that number drops down to 65%. And then we're kind of living and dying by the tackle for loss. The closer those two numbers are together, the better we are at defense holistically. Being able to play base defense and still get a stop is something that is really good. But the years that we were, most years we're right above 85%, somewhere 90%, getting a stop when we get a tackle for loss. Even, and again, a tackle for loss being 1 yard all the way to maybe they have a bad snap and that's a 15-yard loss.
Yeah. On the offensive side of the ball, a lot of guys point to the study by Mike Ayers, who was an analyst, a coach for the Green Bay Packers, and the correlation to no explosives in a drive and the scoring percentage to one explosive to two, and how they incrementally leap.
Sure.
In the percentage of the chances of scoring. And I think you found the same to be true with the tackle for loss, that you get a tackle for loss, there's a good chance that you're going to get a stop. And obviously you get us off schedule. Now we're changing, you know, our mindset and how we call plays. We're looking to a different set of plays, in some ways, maybe even becoming a tendency heavy on having to throw the ball or screens or whatever it might be that allow you to dial in and say, okay, we know now that they have to do this. So here's our thought process. And I think it's a sound way to approach things and just the understanding of that. And I've found that the best teams, when they do find these key analytics that they're going to rely on, they do a good job of making sure that the players understand this as well and how those are keys to the player. So how does that work into the philosophy of the defense, sure, the culture that you're developing with the defense, and you know how that becomes a focus for the players?
Yeah. And so to kind of take that to the next step there, you actually had referenced a quote in that previous podcast by Manny Diaz that most of your tackle for losses are some type of a rugby gator tackle, you know, whatever people are calling it. And like most programs, we're tracking tackles for losses. And the one things that we do is we put together a playlist on Huddle for each individual player, for each position, week by week. And then at the end of the season, kind of go back and really look at that. So we're seeing the different type of tackles that kids are missing. We, in one of those columns, is then really looking at tackles that were missed that were tackles for loss. And I agree exactly what Manny Diaz is saying, that a lot of your tackles are gator tackles. But unfortunately, I believe it's because most of your profile tackles or like head up tackles that are in the backfield end up being a blitzing linebacker or end up being, you know, like a three technique or a nose who is coming straight on head on. And now you've got a less agile athlete going against a really athletic running back. And so we found that those were the ones that were missed the most, which then kind of really changed. Okay, when we are blitzing, where are we blitzing from? Because we don't want to necessarily put our kids in. Like, I love a double A gap pressure as much as anybody, but if we do that, we've got to understand that now the running back is going to change directions. So we've got to really teach up what our nose three technique and defensive ends are doing, because obviously you're funneling the ball there. And then also not be so hard on our two linebackers that are coming through the A gap, because we know that there's a really, again, that's the most missed tackle in our program. And again, just talking with other coaches, I mean, kind of across the board that, yeah, when we get a free runner and he's head up with the running back, that's a tackle that we miss a bunch. And so as far as like where our philosophy, how it affected our philosophy, we end up starting to do some things that were more, like I mentioned earlier, that were more aggressive, but it affected where we were blitzing from. And it affected, you know, again, just the techniques that we were teaching our guys, especially up front, to make sure that we were really sound, really where we were funneling the football too.
Yeah. So I'd like to dig into that a little bit. And
in using that example, like you said, the A gap and then how that affects what you're teaching everybody else. And the question I have before that, and looking at how you're tracking those, Vince DiGaetano's talked about productive misses on the podcast before, meaning that you can miss a tackle, but you know, maybe you tackle that guy because he's avoiding you by going, you know, backwards, and now it funnels it to somebody else, and maybe you end up in that roll tackle situation. So, I mean, are you guys designating that as well, productive misses, just instead of only it's a missed tackle? Because I think doesn't tell the whole story.
It's really led to conversations with our players, and obviously during individual sessions and small group sessions as well, that if you're going to miss, you got to miss on this side, right? Like, if you know, you got to own your leverage. You can't just go in crazy, head on fire, and then miss and then funnel the ball to the wrong guy. And so that's led to a lot of those conversations, as well as with our defensive linemen. And we see that more with defensive linemen, and it's really twofold. If a defensive lineman gets into the backfield really quick, there's often times where he stops because he's thinking it's a screen. You know, he almost pauses for a second, but just kind of talking to him about, again, just owning your leverage and understanding where we're funneling the football to, and then make sure you get to the correct side of the running back so that if he does miss, at least we're pushing the ball back to the right guy, you know, to the guy that we want to be pushing the ball to.
Yeah, so then getting into the awareness you need the other guys to have that, okay, if we are blitzing this A-gap as the example again, here's how it's going to affect you, right? This is the way you need to handle this. So how are those details coached up?
Yeah, and so really, like I said, it provides some great conversation. Like, one of the things that we talked to with our two inside linebackers for the, like, a double A-gap pressure, we cross our double A-gap pressure a bunch instead of just having both linebackers fly through the A-gap, because we really want to get them on different levels. And that way, if we do get a miss, right, we've got another guy to be able to come in and kind of, quote-unquote, clean it up. If we're on the same level, you know, it's really a 50-50 shot on whether or not we push them the right way or not. And so it's a little bit about that, too, and having the conversation with the kids. And specifically, as we're drilling it, you know, like our second blitzer, hey, be patient. It's going to open up a window, and that window is going to open up kind of in the perfect spot for you. Make sure that you're not rushing your blitz.
So I know you had some data to show us too. And before we get into some of the other ideas you have to share, I do want to take a peek at that. And just a note for our listeners, we will make sure that this is on the show notes. They won't be in the description in the app you're listening in, but if you go to coachingcoordinator.com, typically we have those up within 24 to 48 hours after we air the show. So these will be there as well. So, Coach, go ahead and share your screen, but we're going to talk through this to make sure that we're doing this justice on the audio side as well.
For sure.
As coaches, we know that some of the biggest hurdles to our team's success can come from off the field. Your team needs support to tackle the endless list of expenses, uniforms, training equipment, travel, and more. But raising that money can feel like a full-time job. Thankfully, there's Vertical Raise. Vertical Raise is the premier online fundraising platform, using innovative technology to create the easiest and most efficient system available. Raise more money in less time with a local fundraising coach who works with your team every step of the way to customize the ideal fundraiser. With options for online donations, digital discount cards, premium product sales, and even spirit shops, Vertical Raise has top-of-the-line solutions for every fundraising style. To find out more, visit verticalraise.com, and we'll get you connected with an exclusive offer on your first fundraiser.
I've always been interested in the use of technology to make our jobs more effective, so I'm excited to continue sharing modern football technology with you here on the podcast. This innovative system leverages tendencies to improve self-scouting, game planning, and in-game decision-making at the speed of the game. Modern football stands out because it's a battle-tested platform used by teams at all levels, like four-time national champion Bishop Gorman, the five-time California State champion Folsom Bulldogs, six-time Texas State champion Lake Travis, Cal football, and the CFL's Grey Cup champions, the Montreal Alouettes. So book a demo today to see why these teams trust modern football technology.
Visit www.teammofo.com/demo and mention Coaching Coordinator Podcast, or use the coupon code CC10 to receive 10% off your first year.
And so I'll kind of explain this real quick so you kind of have an idea of where. So basically, there's three major conferences in the state of Indiana, the MIC, the HCC, the DAC. There's one other one in Fort Wayne, but basically two Indianapolis conferences and then the one we're in Northwest Indiana. These are kind of the top teams along the left-hand side. I've taken all the data from Huddle, downloaded them, you know, downloaded it to a giant spreadsheet and essentially put this together. And so like, I really, really enjoy like these stats right here are some of the ones that I've kind of deep dived into the most to. So the other number that I really love to dive into is base down passing completion percentage and then third down completion percentage. And really, what is the difference between those two? And again, just where kind of where are people at? Those are really kind of the numbers that I really deep dive each offseason into all these different teams to kind of really just see where they're at.
Gotcha. So let's talk a little bit about your deep dive numbers. So, and you have the whole conference here, and the columns you have percentage of potential yarded given up, stop rates.
Yep.
With tackle for loss, no tackle for loss, three and out or takeaway, fourth downs, and rushing stats against. So talk to us about what this is telling you as you look at how all of this breaks down.
Yeah. So again, we'll start with the stop rate and the tackle for loss. And it's really just kind of want to look at two things. One, who is really getting the highest percentage on a year-to-year basis? And you know, really, are we matching up with some of the other top teams in the state? So again, this spreadsheet here that I have is a lot of the top schools in the state. For Indiana, Ben Davis and Brownsburg are both really good. Cathedral's a 6A school, good. A lot of people know Center Grove, who's a big powerhouse, and so on down the line. And obviously those teams are state championship caliber teams year in and year out. So where are their numbers? And then where are our numbers? And obviously getting to that point, some of those numbers are going to change a little bit based on their competition versus our competition, which you got to account for. But again, just really seeing where the stop rates and where some of those teams are. And then also, again, looking at when they don't have a tackle for loss, what percentage of the time are they getting off the field? I'll use Hamilton Southeastern in 2022. You can see when they got a tackle for loss in 2022, they got off the field about 80% of the time. When they didn't get a tackle for loss, they got off the field 82% of the time, which means they're really not relying very heavily on a tackle for loss to get off the field and probably playing really, really, really good base defense. And so I actually got a hold of their defensive coordinator. We ended up having a nice conversation about some of the things that they're able to do, you know, playing base defense and how they go about doing it and kind of his philosophy on everything. And so again, some of these percentages that are really, really high, really, whether it be watching film or talking with them, how do they go about really getting huge stop rates? And then also looking at their explosive play percentage, because it's one thing to blitz the house every play or devote nine guys to, you know, to get in a tackle for loss or a sack, but then you give up a ton of explosive plays. And so I'm really interested in the people that are getting tackles for losses, but also not necessarily giving up a very high explosive play percentage as well, which is something that we track. The next deep dive number that I think is really important, I look at the percentage of potential yardage given up. And so I know that obviously, at the end of the day, we're judged because of wins and losses, and we're also judged because of how many points we give up. And so if we give up 45 points, obviously that's not a good night. We all know that. I'm really interested in the why. And so the percentage of potential yardage given up, to me, this really kind of calculates for either teams that are giving up turnover or, you know, getting the short field because their offense just turned the ball over, or maybe their offense is really good and scoring a lot. And obviously then they, They've got 80 yards to drive. So again, and all of this kind of comes back to the yardage given up. We know the yardage given up is bad. And so really trying to figure out self-scout wise, where are we at relative to the other teams? What percentage of yardage are we giving up? If I was to just look at NFL teams or college, you know, Division I teams where the stats are readily available and it says, you know, they give up 375 yards a game. And while I feel like that's only half the story, right? I remember, you know, I think it might have been one of Notre Dame's coaches. I think that they were playing USC sometime. They remember it was a quote about O.J. Simpson and, you know, gosh, O.J. ran for 300 yards today. Like, why did that happen? And the answer was, well, he only ran for 300. I mean, because he only had 300 yards to run for. He probably could have ran for 600. There was just, he ran out of field. And so, like, it's kind of that mentality that really kind of made me think about, you know, these numbers and really what percentage of yardage is a defense really giving up?
Yeah. How important is that when you look at how this is going to convert to a team win, all sure. those things? Because obviously, field position definitely yep. will come into play. I mean, if somebody has 25 yards to go versus 75, there's more likelihood that, you know, you're going to give up a lesser percentage of that if you get some stops.
Sure. Yeah. And so one of the books that actually a data buddy of mine really turned me on to, and it really started to change my philosophy. Great book. It's Bill Conley, and it's a book called Football Study Hall. And so Bill Conley talks about five major stats, the first one being yards. He talks about turnovers, or as us defensive guys like to say, takeaways, right? Starting field position, points per drive inside the 40. We're trying to focus on different stats inside of those five that matter. And obviously, potential yardage given up is kind of hitting the yards per game and yardage given up. And then also a little bit of that starting field position, you know, like you just mentioned there.
So taking some of these key analytics that you've discovered that can make a difference, walk us through how it changed, I guess, the way you put together the philosophy, the way you guys put together a game plan, the way you guys practice. How did it affect that and taking it to the practical level of, okay, this is what we know, so this is how we're going to make it work?
Yeah, so I'll start with kind of a game plan. And so week by week, we're really kind of looking at kind of that spreadsheet that I just shared with you. And would be happy to kind of take some screenshots and do that yeah. for the listeners so that they can kind of see what's going on. And really week by week, it's just about downloading huddle data and kind of importing it into this pre-made spreadsheet. And then the beauty of seeing, and really why I reached out to a lot of buddies and kind of got their conference film, was I really wanted to see what was good. And so from a week to week basis, now we've got a pretty good idea when we're breaking down and being able to just holistically look at data. What is this team good at? And what is this team not good at? And, you know, there are some teams that just don't give up, you know, or they don't advance the ball very well. They don't get a lot of yardage for one reason or another. And so in that case, you know, obviously just being able to play a little bit more safe, let them make mistake. Obviously, we play really good teams as well. That we played a team in the Final Four this year where their offense was gaining 70%+ of the yardage available to them, which is incredible. And so we knew that we were going to have to give some tackle for loss in order to be able to do that. And so it's really impacted the game plan for that reason. Really finding out what they're good at from a practice standpoint, and from a, you know, it's really kind of changed our philosophy of what we need to do and what we need to be good at. Our offensive coordinator, when we first started diving into this about 3 years ago, he started to get really upset because we're doing a lot of different stuff in practice, where, you know, trying to create that havoc and get those havoc numbers up, tackle for loss, sacks, and doing all that. And he was going, gosh, you guys are going to blitz more than any team in the country. Gosh, you guys are going to play more bare front than any team in the country, and just some of this different stuff. And it was all tongue in cheek, of course, because we're all rowing the boat the same way and doing the same thing. But we always break each other down in the off season. And, you know, he said, well, I was really happy to see that you guys' blitz rate was really high, or five man front rate, you know, however he was looking at that was about what it was in practice. And obviously, you know, you got to practice the way that you're playing. The big thing for us was we knew that if we were going to try to create more tackles for loss, being more aggressive was something that we were going to have to do. Being more aggressive specifically on first down, which then was going to have to lead us to really deep dive into second down a little bit more. Second down is such an interesting down, right? Second and 10 after an incompletion is much different than second and 10 after a 0 yard run and, you know, philosophy. So obviously having a plan for some of those different things and trying to teach our kids a little bit about, you know, what's coming next as well.
With the creating tackles for loss, obviously there's the approach there, but you mentioned it before, the other part of the story is the explosive. So how do you make sure you guys are playing sound technique or sound coverage, whatever it might be, that you are able to limit those explosives? Obviously not missing tackles is one, but you know, in the passing game, you know, if you're sending everybody and they're able to throw a ball up to somebody who can go and get it, it's going to make a difference.
Sure. Yeah. So like, I know you're an Ohio guy, so I'll tread lightly when I say this, but my dad was born and raised in Michigan, and I was adopted into the University of Michigan family as a young kid. And, you know, obviously a big fan of them. And, you know, kind of when we started really first starting this deep dive of being more aggressive was when Don Brown was at Michigan, and have had some connections up there and been able to go visit and went down and sat with him. And obviously his big philosophy was, you know, solve your problems with aggression. And he did it by playing a ton of cover one. At the end of his tenure there, he started to give up some explosive plays, whether it be bowl games or specifically Ohio State, that kind of
mesh killed them that particular day.
Yeah. It was a great philosophy until it wasn't, right?
Right.
But you know, and I understand that playing cover one is obviously the easy thing, right? Because then everything kind of sorts itself out. The unfortunate thing is, though, I was watching real time, you know, trying to learn from his mistakes where he was giving up big explosive plays, whether it be to Saquon Barkley or Delvin Cook at Florida State in a bowl game, or obviously Ohio State in the passing game. And really looking at that going, gosh, you know, he's, you know, this is the best in the business, and kind of developed the philosophy of, I share this with our kids. I try to explain to our kids what we're doing and our coaching staff. If you and I were playing Madden against each other and I saw you pick a run play, like I want all 11 guys playing the run, right? I don't want 5 DBs or 4 DBs looking at a receiver who have 0% chance of getting the football. All of this was kind of going at the same time where sim pressures and creepers and zone, you know, a lot of zone blitz. I know the zone blitz has been around forever, you know, but where it started to become a little bit more popular in the college game, where guys were able to talk about it. And it wasn't just fire zone pressures, but you're able to still play some cover four and have some blitzers and things like that. And, you know, so early on, I guess I would say like we played some cover one and still gave up some explosive plays and really kind of had to go back and change our philosophy a little bit to where we're still playing some zone coverage and getting all 11 defenders' eyes on the run game. Again, if it's a pass game, do you have guys that can cover? How do you give up, or how do you not give up explosive plays in the pass game? And obviously figuring out how other teams are manufacturing those explosive plays. Is it through the run after the catch? Is it just because they're throwing the ball deep? And each one of those is a different answer for a different guy, you know, a different thing. If a guy is, you know, if you have a Wes Welker type who's getting the ball in the slot and then getting loose, well, we've got to deny him the football more than we would somebody who is, you know, just catching a shot. And okay, well, we may need to do some different things against that guy.
So it's going into really, what are you going to employ versus the different people you face that, you
sure.
know, you
will yeah, absolutely.
So for a coach out there who's looking to get into analytics, which I think is smart for anybody these days, and you could get lost in it too, because you have a really cool spreadsheet with all kinds of things in there. What's your recommendation for getting into this in a way that you can find the things that are going to help you immediately?
Yeah. So I'll tell you this, like I've always had a love for numbers, and I know that that's not everybody. And I used to just track things by hand. And as I would go through and, you know, do, you know, like one of the numbers I look at is three and out and takeaway percentage. So I would just go through as I watch film at the end of the year and, you know, tally up, did that drive end in a three and out or a turnover, and just try to figure some of those numbers out from a self-scout standpoint. And I will say this, from the analytics standpoint, there are so many really smart guys out there that really have gained an advantage on their opponents and in general on their own self-scout stuff that it's definitely worth doing. When I first started, I had basically like your typical seventh grade Excel education. You know, when it came to a spreadsheet, I knew how to add two cells together and that was it. I think that people that are really interested in analytics, the first thing you need to do is go through, whether you're an offensive guy or a defensive guy, and just figure out efficiency rates. And once you figure out, I mean, it could be as simple as, you know, how efficient were you against the run and how efficient were you against the pass? And then really just let your mind go from there. Each column in a spreadsheet is just like a column in Huddle. And just like we filter the columns in Huddle, that's all a spreadsheet is just a huge filter. And so, you know, once you figure out the run pass, maybe then you go first down, second down, third down, and kind of, you know, start as simple with an efficiency question and then go from there.
Well, it's great stuff, Josh. I'm sure our listeners can reach out to you too and pick your brain a little bit. I know you like sharing with coaches. What's the best way for them to get a hold of you?
Yeah, either email or through social media. My email is jsabinas, S-A-B-I-N-A-S, at mvsc.k12.in.us, one of those really long school emails that I'm constantly checking. And then social media, just through Twitter specifically, _coach_Sabinas, followed up by an underscore. So _coach_Sabinas_. So.
There you go. Well, Coach, I appreciate you taking the time. Thank you for reaching out and certainly would love to hear more as you make this journey through using analytics to play better defense. And again, we'll share all of the spreadsheets and screenshots with you on coachingcoordinator.com. Coach, best of luck to you and the Pirates here in 2024.
I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Here are Winning Edge takeaways and ideas for implementation. 1. Utilize defensive analytics to track key metrics such as stop rates, tackle for loss percentages, and explosive play rates. By analyzing these statistics, you can gain valuable insights into your team's performance and opponents' tendencies, allowing for more informed game planning and defensive strategies. 2. Ask why. It's important to figure out the why behind a statistic. Simply looking at numbers or data points may not provide the full story or understanding of a situation. By delving deeper into the reasons behind the statistics, such as examining the context, game situations, opponent strengths and weaknesses, you can gain valuable insights that can inform game plans, strategies, and player development. This approach allows for more comprehensive analysis and a deeper understanding of factors influencing performance. And 3, implement a balanced approach to defensive tactics, combining aggression with sound coverage techniques to prevent explosive plays. You should consider varying defensive alignments, pressure packages, and coverage schemes based on opponent tendencies and game situations to create a well-rounded defense that can effectively stop the run and pass while minimizing big plays. If you're looking to harness the power of analytics in game planning and in-game adjustments, we highly recommend checking out our partner, Modern Football Technology. Schedule a demo and see how this customizable tool can help you become more efficient and effective in your coaching. Check out the link in the show notes. Follow all we're doing at coachingcoordinator.com and follow us on X at Coach K Grabowski.